to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It's Saturday, end of the week. We're going to do a look back on all the stuff that's been happening all week long. It just seems to get crazier and crazier and crazier. And before I get in there, though, a reminder, we are once again trying to get our little studio webcam to run again. As I mentioned in yesterday's show, we're having a really bad month with all of our computer hardware here at the What Really Happened Media Center. And I'm mentioning it only because we're dealing with a time when our economy is really in terrible, terrible shape, and a big reason that the economy is in terrible shape is that we don't do a lot of manufacturing anymore. We stopped making products to make money, and we made money the product. And just somehow our government and our corporate culture got this idea that we could take money and move it around and repackage it and wrap it in tin foil and put ribbons on it and glitter and put it under new lighting, and somehow it would grow all by itself. And ultimately, this doesn't work, because it doesn't matter how much paper fake money the Federal Reserve prints up out of thin air. Real wealth, the kind that you build a nation and an economy on, comes from having a product that you can sell. And we are seeing more and more that those few products still being made, or at least designed by the United States, the quality has really declined. I remember when I was a kid, where made in Japan meant cheap and shoddy. And today, it's made in America is coming to mean cheap and shoddy. And made in Japan is becoming synonymous with the best quality, certainly for electronics. And as we look at all the problems we're having with, like, Microsoft's product, with, you know, with Vista, and yes, a big part of this is all the security that has to be added into the system to deal with the hackers. And there doesn't seem to be a willingness to address the reality that hackers are causing far more damage to this country than terrorists do. In sheer scale of monetary losses, loss of productivity, this last month I have been doing more work on the computers than they have been doing work for me. And that is a big, big reason our country is grinding to a halt. We're spending all of our time dealing with office systems that as often as not are losing or corrupting our data, and that is definitely something we need to pull back from. Anyway, that's my rant about the computer systems, and we'll check in later and see if this webcam is still working or not. And if it is working and you're able to look out the window, the sun is just coming up on another gorgeous day here on the island of Oahu. We seem to be out of our cold snap. It's actually 75 degrees this morning and feeling a little bit less frigid than it was about a week ago. Now, turning back to the news, looking back over this last week, I was watching the corporate media today, and it was rather interesting as they're talking about the financial news to see them kind of squirm in their seats explaining why the Dow Industrials shot up at a time when record-setting unemployment numbers were being revealed. And they were explaining it away as anticipation for the bailout, which means stocks go up when the government and corporation loot more money from your pocket. But just from the way they were hemming and hawing, it's very obvious that even they are beginning to understand that somehow the Dow Industrials and the stock market numbers are very much out of sync with the reality of American economic life. And I think this is an issue that we need to be looking at, because we know going all the way back to the Clinton administration, the Dow Industrials were kind of subverted to be a political banner. It's no longer a measure of the, you know, rate of returns on your investments. The Dow was used as a flag to wave around to say the economy is doing wonderful and it's got to be just, you know, absolutely great that it's doing this. And Clinton certainly did it, and Bush certainly did it, and it looks like Obama is trying to do it, because for most of Americans who are really not spending a lot of time studying economics, the Dow number is just that sort of one big red button they can go to say, is the economy recovering or not? And if they can keep pushing that Dow up, then they can sit in the news and say, well, we've seen the worst, and things are turning around, and we're going to be getting a lot better from here. And yet, even the corporate media recognizes that Dow is somehow not really reflecting what's going on in the economy as a whole. Now, it could be Plunge Protection Team. Could be the classic bump and dumps. We're seeing so many of them. I'm still getting junk mails from people saying, oh, you must buy this stock right now. And a lot of scammers are out there running rampant. Basically, the SEC has admitted before Congress they're not watching for the stock scammers. And so the scammers are just saying, all right, man, party on. And they're out there playing their games and getting rich at the expense of everybody else in the country. So, turning to the reality of the country and its economy, yesterday the Feds closed two more banks. They shut down one in Southern California and another in Atlanta. Let's see, First Bank Financial Services in Georgia and Alliance Bank in California have been seized. And it just seems to go on and on and on. Now, of course, the big news this last week was Obama's version of the bailout. They've been talking about it all week. Obama's been on TV saying, if this is not passed, catastrophe awaits for all of us. It will be a catastrophe. And I poke fun at that because this is the same thing we got last September. This is the same song and dance we got September. If we didn't pass Bush's bailout, the economy would collapse in 3 days and there would be troops in the streets. That's what we were being told by the same people who told us that Saddam Hussein had nuclear bombs that they were going to drop all over us with as little as 45 minutes warning. And so it hardly comes as a surprise that in October of last year, after the bailout had been arm-twisted through Congress, it turns out that three senior economists at the Minneapolis Federal Reserve came forward and said that according to the numbers of the Federal Reserve itself, there had been no credit crisis. There was money to be loaned. Interbank lending was proceeding properly. Yes, the economy was showing signs of strength, but there was no big crisis. It was just manufactured out of thin air to try and build American support for a money grab, to take money from the American people, to give to the banks, to loan back to the American people at interest. That's really what it all came down to. And they sold it. They were going to buy up all the toxic assets from the housing bubble. And as soon as it was passed, it became direct cash injections. And we've seen story after story, CEOs just taking the money and throwing themselves parties, giving themselves bonuses, just all of this incredible, incredible excess. And, folks, this is repeated the same thing. Last night they were talking about a deal had been reached on Obama's bailout. The price tag was set at $780 billion that you're going to have to pay back someday. This morning it's already edged back up to $840 billion, meaning the dealing is still going on. The vote is scheduled for Monday. It's probably going to be rancorous, but they're probably going to pass it anyway. Now, this bailout supposedly includes a tax rebate check to you for, well, the numbers are floating around based on your filing circumstances, your earning level, but approximately $1,000. I think it's going to be $1,200 for couples and a little bit less, and it's based on how much you're making. They're trying to graduate it. But, here's the point. As was the case with Bush's rebates in 2002 and 2008, it is not an actual refund or gift. It is merely another loan. You will be expected to repay this money back to the government as an increase in taxes next year. Okay? And here's really, in a nutshell, what it comes down to. The Obama administration is borrowing money from the Federal Reserve that you will have to repay to loan you $1,000, which you will then have to pay back as well. And Barack Obama wonders why the American people are not supporting these bailouts. Now, if you go to whatreallyhappened.com and skip on down there, you're going to see this very interesting video. Robert Reich, Obama's economic advisor, talking about where the recovery jobs are going to go. And he flat out says, we're not creating recovery jobs for professionals. And he uses the phrase, white male construction workers. Now, I am sorry, but if an administration advisor went on the TV and said, we're not going to give out any of the jobs to black male construction workers, they'd be burning the guy in effigy on the mall by lunchtime. We're going to take a break here. 800-259-9231. Matt is answering the phones today. Call in. We'll be right back.
The This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com.
And aloha.
Set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
I am so sorry. I apologize, Mr. Announcer Guy. I just jumped the gun here. I'm having so much fun. I didn't let you have your turn. Okay, we're back here talking about the economy, and we're talking about Barack Obama's bailout deal. And the deal-making is continuing on through the weekend. The vote is scheduled to happen on Monday, and already we're seeing a lot of criticism of Republicans over what is perceived as attempts to gut a lot of these spending from the bill. And the attacks on the Republicans are taking the form of, how dare they? I mean, they just sat there and let the excesses of the Bush administration, you know, run up the national debt by $5 trillion over the last 8 years, and they didn't have any concerns about it then, and how dare they be obstructionist to Barack Obama's plan right now. And everybody's scratching their head, you know, why the sudden change? Well, it's really easy to explain. When it was Bush's bailout plan, Republican cronies were getting most of the money. Now it's Barack Obama's plan, and Democratic cronies are getting most of the money, and it makes perfect sense if you think about it from that point of view. And speaking of point of view, from where we, the people, who are going to pick up the tab on all of these bailouts, you know, it all looks pretty much the same to us. It's the same manure, it's just a different sphincter. And the bottom line is they're robbing from the poor to give to the rich. And the only thing we, the people, will get, we'll get some token attention. There's that loan, that temporary loan of money that they're going to give us and then take back a year later. You know, and it's this wonderful deal, and they want to stand up there, and they want us to admire and applaud them. Oh, yes, you took $20,000 from us in taxes last year, and you're going to loan us $1,000 to tide us over until next year. Such a deal that we should be dealing with. And the bottom line is, the last bailout did not work. The money was just taken and looted. And I don't expect this one to be run any better at all. Barack Obama wants to put salary caps on the CEOs, but then he leaves open a deferred compensation plan through stock options. So, again, it's all cosmetic and it's all for appearance, and nothing truly meaningful is being done. Now, I'm going to step into an area where normally we don't talk about very much, but I really felt that this was an important issue to raise. As the economy tightens and budgets start getting cut at the federal and state and local levels, you are going to see some pretty extreme claims made by various groups in an effort to stave off having their own personal budget cut. And this was illustrated by a story that came out of Canada Today, and the headline read, "Child Porn Scourge Creates More Suspects Than Can Be Arrested." And the quote from the line is, "Police battling the scourge of child pornography are busting more and more people for trading in the horrific images, and while there are tens of thousands of known suspects, Canadian authorities lament they don't have the time or resources to investigate them all." When you hear that word, resources, then the point of this article is not about child porn. It's about don't touch our budget. That's what this is about. Now, I will be the first to admit there are some very sick people out there who do some very strange things to little kids, particularly among the clergy. But when I hear the word resources, you know, it's all about the money. And I want to remind people about the back in the 1980s and 1990s, we had this panic going on about child satanic ritual abuse. I'm not kidding. This was a big thing back in the 1980s. There was this media-fed panic. The corporate media was just saying, oh, there's Satanists are out there and they're stealing your children. Or worse, they're having children just so they can sacrifice them to Satan. And this went on for like about 10 years. And vast amounts of tax money were diverted into special investigation units. And after some 10 years and millions of dollars spent, not one authentic case of satanic ritual abuse was ever found. It was a crisis that was created out of thin air so that opportunists could get a chunk of money from the government to go out and say, yes, I am a professional paid witch hunter, child sexual abuse, whatever. It's the same thing. It's the same mechanism all over. And one of the most famous cases of accusation of child molesting with possible satanic links back then was the McMartin preschool case. And you had this mother who was a known alcoholic. She was diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic, and she accuses one of the workers of the school of molesting her child. There was an arrest, no evidence, they let the guy go, but the police decided to send a confidential letter to everybody, some confidential, basically warning customers of the school that this issue of sexual molestation had been raised. Well, that started it. Everybody said, oh my goodness, my child is acting funny, it must be molestation. This thing dragged on for 6 years, $15 million in prosecution costs, nobody was charged, I'd rather nobody was convicted. And at the end, they realized that what had happened is the people who were talking to the children, the interrogators, had been so convinced that they were onto something that they were pressuring the children. And the children just said, okay, yeah, sure, that's what happened. And they should have realized something was going wrong because there were all these stories about secret underground tunnels through which the children were taken to be, you know, to these satanic rituals. And, of course, no tunnels were ever found. And yet the hysteria became self-feeding and moved on from that. So, like I said, yes, there are real molesters out there. But sometimes these situations get blown up in order to be exploited financially for certain vested interests. If you get a chance, there's a wonderful book by Christina Hobbs Sommers called Who Stole Feminism? And in it, she details how feminists, opportunists, political opportunists, took the real issue of rape and turned it into this whole media crisis with which to get funding for rape studies and rape crisis centers and rape counselors and all this other stuff, most of which wound up never actually being used. And the backlash from that, and here's the real irony, the backlash from all this fake rape hysteria and the epidemic of false accusations that resulted from the media firestorm is that real rape victims found it even harder to convince the police that they were victims, because the police had been burned by so many lawsuits and so many problems from all the false allegations. They didn't want to hear anything from any woman about a sexual assault. And so this whole crisis made a lot of money for the feminist opportunists and actually wound up hurting the real victims. And very often that's the way these things go. So the point I'm making here is right now our budget scrapped. Government agencies are all trying to find ways that they can keep their budget and let somebody else take the budget hit. And so we're going to start seeing a lot of stuff in the media about this crisis is out of control and that crisis is out of control and these monsters are hiding in your bedroom closet. And the only way you will be safe is if you tell your congressman not to cut our budget in the coming months. And we're going to see a lot of this stuff being put out there. And it's propaganda. And the issue isn't about really protecting children. It's about protecting budgets. It's about protecting privilege. It's about protecting seniority and careers. We've got a caller waiting on the line. We'll get to him after we come back from these words from our sponsors, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
Okay, is the announcer done? Can I talk now? I think so. Anyway, welcome back to our show here. We've got a caller on the line right now. We're going to go to Mike in Georgia. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Good morning. I wanted to make a comment about the gangster government and their recent capers here, Grand Theft Looting 1, the bailout with false Bush, and now they're on to Grand Theft Looting 2, the stimulus, with crime lord Obama. And the second one there was the topic of discussion on the Washington Journal one day this week, and they had a "Are you still beating your wife?" kind of control question they were doing with it, which is, do you favor the Buy American Amendment on it, like, you know, should we spend some of the loot in town before we escape? And I was going to be sarcastic and say it was like talking about whether we should buy condoms, you know, for the rape. But ironically, they kind of stole my punchline because they put the condom getting right in one of their amendments.
Yeah, they kind of took the fun out of that whole thing, didn't they, with that? You know, the problem with the Buy American clause, and I'm a great believer in buying American when America has a product that is worth buying, but the downside of this is, you know, you've got people screaming protectionism, and you've got the European Union talking about starting a trade war, because up until the grand collapse, America was a major consumer of all the world's products. It's just we were doing it all on our national credit cards. And at the same time, you know, Bush was giving tax credits to the corporations to make it easy for these corporations to send our high-paying jobs to other countries. And they're standing around now and scratching their heads and wondering just what the heck happened. And I think it just underscores the fact that much of our economic policy is being set with such short-term consideration and without really a regard to what the long-term effects are going to be. And I think one of the downsides of our current system of government is that we have leaders who are thinking only in time spans of 2 years or 4 years or 6 years or 8 years. And nobody is thinking what's going to happen 20, 30 years in the future if we follow this given policy today. And I think the perfect example of that is going all the way back to the 1980s, when we began to really see our manufacturing leaving for tax-friendlier shores. And the U.S. government, instead of dealing with that issue and saying, okay, we have got to be competitive in terms of a business climate with the rest of the world to keep our manufacturing here, and they said, nah, we don't need manufacturing. Just get your hands dirty anyway, and who needs that? We'll just create the service economy. And the service economy was this laughable idea that we could prosper the nation by doing each other's laundry for a fee. And for a while it worked, because as long as the money was flipping back and forth from one American to the other to do their laundry or their paperwork or listen to them complain about their neuroses, the tax revenues still, you know, were flowing to the government. But what was happening is no new money was coming into the country. It was just a transition of money from the private sector into government hands. And after a while, the inevitable back pressure of that one-way flow began to slow it all down, much as the huge one-way pressure from our trade imbalance sooner or later had to catch up and slow down our cross-border trading. So this is, unfortunately, a very complex issue, and I would like to recommend to people to buy American, but we've got to satisfy two situations. We've got to be selling products outside the country in order to balance our trade out there, because we still buy a lot of stuff from other countries. And two, if you want people to buy American products, you've got to make good American products. And again, this gets back to the issue of Microsoft and some of the other products that are made by American companies that just can't stand up to what we are getting from other countries around the world. Even with import tariffs, we're getting better products for less money from these other countries than we can make here in the United States. We've lost our know-how on how to make this stuff, and it's going to be a very long process to get it back. And we can't afford to just play catch-up with these other countries making the products we're buying today. We have to jump ahead and figure out what are the products that are going to be needed tomorrow, and we better start making those today. We've got to make things that only Americans know how to make. Then the world will start bringing the money back into this country.
Well, I agree with the problem with the trickle-down attrition, but using stolen loot, which is basically what they're doing right now in order to buy American, is you know, like I say, it's using the criminal proceedings. I also wanted to ask you a question about the Gore gang that you were talking about, you know, and their it's getting hot protection scam. You said last week that somebody had reported that basically they were talking bass backwards, and that the warming's really causing the CO2 rather than the CO2 causing the warming.
Says yeah, that's from That's from the Antarctic ice cores that they were taking out. And what was interesting is this data had been cited by Al Gore as proof that carbon dioxide was driving atmospheric temperature. But on close examination of the data, it was revealed from these ice core studies that the amount of atmospheric carbon dioxide was lagging behind the temperature change. And so that indicates that the temperature change was the causal rather than the effect
what was going on. What is the source of that report?
We had it up on whatreallyhappened.com, and I don't have this attribution memorized, but if you go to whatreallyhappened.com and you look through the science and health categories, it's only been there a couple of days ago. And I'll repost it to the top of the website after today's show so that you can go back and take a look at it.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks an awful lot, Mike. Thank you for the call, and please call in again. And as we head to the end of this segment here, we're getting a news report that Israel is staging mock aerial raids over Lebanon. Now, whether you call it war mania, not real war, but an incredible simulation or something like that. But basically, in a nutshell, Israel is flying their warplanes over Lebanon. They are moving around and turning and burning and leaving shockwaves and stuff to make it look like there's an air battle or an attack going on. They're just not actually firing any bullets, dropping any bombs. Now, this is obviously an attempt to provoke Lebanon into doing something that Israel could then cite as justification to go back in for another try at the Litani River. If you remember from back in 2006, Israel did not do very well in their attempt to invade Lebanon. They came out of it looking pretty bad, just as they've come out of this recent incursion into Gaza looking very, very bad. It is expected that Benjamin Netanyahu, who is as war hawk as you can get, is going to win the Israeli elections. And it looks like Israel's military is already cranking up to basically embark on a policy of invading their neighboring countries or attempting to provoke them into a retaliation that can then be claimed as an attack on Israel, which in turn justifies overwhelming response using weapons and bombs supplied by the U.S. and paid for by you. So this is a story we definitely need to be looking at. Meanwhile, getting back to the economy and returning to one of my favorite subjects, Swindler's List. We are getting more and more stories about the fallout of Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme. We're hearing stories about a 90-year-old gentleman, Ian Thierman, lost everything that he had. His entire retirement package lost in Madoff's Ponzi scheme, and now he's having to work in a grocery store. 90 years old, he's working in a grocery store just to make ends meet. And it's an absolute tragedy. And I bring this up for two reasons. First of all, there doesn't seem to be a real strong interest in finding where that $50 billion went. I mean, it's not like Bernie Madoff just took all that cash and, like the Joker in the Batman movie, just pile up in a big room and set fire to it just to prove he could do it. He didn't do that. Somebody got that money. Bernie got a chunk of it, obviously. But his earlier investors, the people who got in on the ground floor of his pyramid scheme, they got it. Where did that money go? Who got that money? Why aren't we going after them in order to bring the money to give it back to this 90-year-old guy who's working in a grocery store? We're going to take another break here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231. When we come back, I want to get into this Madoff thing a little bit more and why the SEC seemed to have had a leash on it during this whole period. We'll be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of hour one of our show. And after we wrap up this segment, there'll be a news break. We'll be back with hour two. And I should mention, we were scheduled to have Dr. Frederick Tobin on the show today in response to the brouhaha over Bishop Williamson and his doubts about the Orthodox account of the Holocaust. Unfortunately, when we worked out the time zone situations, we realized that for Dr. Tobin to be on the show for Saturday morning means he would have to be up at an insanely early hour, so we're going to reschedule for later this week during the weekday show, and I just wanted to let you know about that. Now, getting back to Swindler's List and Bernie Madoff, you need to understand that in a so-called pyramid or Ponzi scheme, not everybody loses their money. By the very nature of the Ponzi scheme, the first people in, the people who started it with him, who were there at the beginning, they've made their money back and more. They've made profits. When a pyramid scheme collapses, it's the people right on the bottom, the people who just now got into the deal, who just now gave him his money, they're the ones who lose. So this $50 billion that Bernie Madoff's swindle has caused to vanish, it's still out there somewhere. Now, obviously, Bernie himself has a big chunk of it. But his early investors, the ones who got in there, who started it with him, some of whom may have even known that it was a Ponzi scheme, they're still out there and they've got their money. Why are we not finding out who they are and going after them to get back the money for this 90-year-old guy who's having to work in a grocery store right now because he lost everything with Madoff's investments? Because if you receive stolen property, let's say that you go into a store, you go into a jewelry store, and you buy your wife a bracelet for Valentine's Day, which is coming up. And then it's found out that the jewelry store was actually a front for a fencing operation, and the bracelet was stolen. They're going to make you give it back. You know, tough luck that it was stolen and you paid money for it. It's stolen property. It's got to be returned to its rightful owner. And the same should be true of the money that Bernie Madoff took from his later investors to give to the earlier investors. Why aren't we going after those people? And this leads directly into my next question. A funds manager, investor, expert named Harry Markopoulos was warning the Securities Exchange Commission for years that something was wrong with Bernie Madoff's operation. As we saw in the congressional hearings this last week, Markopoulos literally put the evidence that Bernie Madoff was cheating his investors, wrapped it up in a nice gift pack on a silver tray with a big pretty bow on it and handed it to the SEC, and the SEC ignored it year after year after year after year after year. And during these congressional hearings, the SEC was saying, well, we're filing actions against him now. And that's not the point. As the head of the financial ways and I'm forgetting the exact name of the committee, but the congressman who was in charge of these hearings was saying, it isn't the SEC's job to go in and pound on Bernie Madoff after Bernie Madoff confesses on national TV he's been a bad boy. The SEC's job, for which they are paid your tax dollars, is to find these guys and shut them down before they become a big problem and a huge loss to America. And so right now we have the image of the SEC that was ignoring Bernie Madoff, indeed protecting him, when people like Harry Markopoulos was saying, you should be watching this guy. And that tells us right there that there are more pyramid schemes out there that haven't been discovered. Maybe that's the reason for the big hush-hush and the big secret, is they don't want us to know just how much of the stock market has become scams and pyramids and Ponzi's over the last several years. Because the big secret, most of you probably don't understand, probably don't know by now, white-collar crime costs Americans 10 times as much as street crime. The news is always filled, you know, with this guy held up a liquor store and, you know, the guy down in Shreveport stole $100 and he got 12 years in prison. But on the year that Charles Keating looted his depositors and investors with the Lincoln Savings and Loan debacle, remember the Keating Five, John Glenn and John McCain and a couple of others, that whole thing? Charles Keating took more from the American people in that one swindle than all of the street crime in the United States for that entire year. All the muggings, all the robberies, all the thefts, all the burglaries put together across the entire country added up to less than what Charles Keating took from Americans. White-collar crime is really the big threat to our economy. And yet, as we saw with this last week's congressional hearing, the SEC is somehow either just incompetent or lazy or more than likely being restrained from investigating these white-collar crimes. We know that Norman Hsu, when he was running his little stock swindle, he took a lot of that money and he donated to political campaigns, including Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Now, they've given the money back now that they got caught, but what about the money that hasn't been caught yet? Are all these scams and swindles the funding mechanism for political campaigns? Was Bernie Madoff? We know that a lot of the money that he took wound up going into these foundations, which in turn support AIPAC. Was Bernie Madoff the funding mechanism by which AIPAC was able to afford subverting the U.S. Congress to Israel's agenda? And is that why the SEC was held off from Bernie Madoff all these years? We're going to go to the phones. We've got Richard in France. Bonjour, Richard. Comment vas-tu?
Très bien. Bonjour. It's morning there, as I understand it.
Yes, it is. It's just coming up on 8 o'clock.
Okay, yeah. It's right over here. It says 7 o'clock. Yeah, I had to do with the Madoff. It has something to do with that because this Madoff guy, you listen to the name of this name. It sounds like Madoff. Does that sound like a Russian name? Oh, it's
yeah.
Right. And what about Chertoff? Does that sound like a Russian name?
Yes.
And this Giuliani, oh, he went ahead and swept out all those nasty Italians out of New York and replaced them with a bunch of Romanovs, as I can understand it. And I'm kind of, you know, I would rather just be beat up by the Italians rather than the Madoff types, if you can understand my gist. And people are saying, and I've heard on the on your site here, that that this Madoff guy just might be the guy that's laundering all of the drug money and all of the international money for some kind of an international giant consortium. I don't want to sound too emotional, but can you give me a little a hint on this there, Michael?
Well, you know, obviously with the fact that nobody wants to seem to delve into his finances all that deeply, it's certainly a possibility. I mean, I keep thinking back to the first SNL bailout during the Elder Bush's term in office, and it turned out that the taxpayers were forced to cough up the money for that one. Most of the money was not going to save widows and orphans and pensioners. It was, in fact, being used to reimburse corporate accounts that were placed in these banks, and all of that tied into the Iran-Contra gun and drug-running operation. And it was this cute little money-laundry, money-growing system that the CIA set up all on the backs of the American taxpayer. So, yeah, there's a lot of people speculating about, you know, what may have been going on. With $50 billion in money that has vanished, obviously something is going on. A lot of people are thinking, well, Bernie just admitted to $50 billion so that his clients can take it off their insurance. And certainly they're already talking about going back to the taxpayers and saying, you've got to cover our losses. It's just a huge, it's being turned into a huge money grab. And the bottom line is nobody really wants to look at where that original money went to. That is the real secret. And Richard, I'm sorry, we're out of time. We've got to stop here for commercials and a news break. But we'll be back in hour two with more news, more talk, and more of your phone calls. So So aloha. Until then, we'll see you in about 7 minutes.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to hour two of our show today. Special shout out to all of our affiliates who join us for this second hour. And before we get back into the news and stuff, I've got a listener email that just came in. Americans wouldn't need a stimulus package if most of their federal taxes weren't going to the Federal Reserve to pay off the interest on the money we borrow from them. The Fed creates that money by running their printing presses, charges us interest on the face value of the bills they print. Then they rush us into foreign wars so that we have to keep borrowing and borrowing from them and paying more and more interest on the loans we are running up. These people make Madoff scam look like child's play. Now that so many of us are unemployed, we have time to review the Federal Reserve scam and the demand and to demand an end to it all. By the way, once America is officially bankrupt, we will be borrowing from the International Monetary Fund, Zionist-owned, same as the Federal Reserve. The details of the loans will be done behind closed doors between the Zionist bankers and their puppets that permeate our government at the highest levels. The loan agreements will be stacked in favor of the IMF, and we will really be paying through the nose for the loans from that band of pirates. How do I know this? They have pulled this stunt on bankrupt countries around the world. It is just the next step in bleeding a country dry. And that's absolutely true. And back during the late 1980s, I think it was, there was a sort of a huge scandal. It wasn't reported so much in the United States, but the reason there was so much hostility in South America against the United States was the revelation that the U.S. government was using the banking system as an instrument of foreign policy. That countries would come to the U.S. and, you know, before Reagan-Bush, the United States was the world's largest creditor nation. We had so much money, we were loaning it to everybody else. And then after 12 years of Reagan, Elder Bush, we were the world's largest debtor nation. Talk about a reversal. So these South American countries would come in and they would borrow this money from American banks. And the American banks would impose conditions on these countries, which were, in fact, foreign policy of the U.S. government. Then, and this is what got a lot of people angry, the U.S. government would send covert operatives into these countries to commit just enough economic sabotage to keep them from ever paying the loans off completely. They'd have to renegotiate, they'd have to extend the loan, and on and on. And it was a way of just keeping these people permanently enslaved by this awareness of debt. And eventually, a lot of these South American countries realized it was just another scam. And they were very unhappy with the United States. Of course, you know, the official story of the United States government is that all these other countries hate us for our freedoms. No, it doesn't. They hate us because we've gone in there and messed around with their countries for the personal profit and aggrandizement of American corporate heads and their pet politicians. So anyway, getting back to our current situation, this first hour we were talking about the economy and we're talking about Bernie Madoff and we're talking about the bailout situation. I want to open this hour talking about a story. You heard it on the news break about this Peanut Corporation of America down in Georgia. This company apparently knew they were selling tainted nuts, nuts infected with salmonella. They knew it. Their own tests had come back and said, this product is contaminated. Now, the company's official story is that they kept retesting until they got a negative result. Now, I'm sorry, if you have, even if you have five tests and one comes back positive, you should be exercising some caution there. Now, the FDA is coming out and saying that in point of fact, these second tests in many cases were simply not done. They had peanuts, they tested positive for salmonella, sell them out the door. Now, I point this out because American corporate law shields the owners of corporations from bad business decisions. If they go bankrupt, you cannot attach their personal wealth. That's part of the personhood of corporation. The corporation is the entity to be sued and taken to court and punished, not the corporation's owners. It's one of the reasons why people who own corporations can become very rich even though their corporations are going out of business. Now, the law does not protect the owners of these corporations from criminal acts. And I think this is a criminal act. And so what I want the media to be doing, and I am waiting in vain to hear it, is to be told the names of the people who own this corporation and what possessed them to say, yeah, it's okay to go ahead and sell salmonella-tainted peanuts across the country. Some of this stuff wound up in the emergency meals FEMA has been handing out. Can you imagine you lose your home to hurricane or flood and FEMA comes along and says, oh, here's a free meal, and you eat the meal and you get sick. And so I think we need the names of these people to be made public. We need to find out who they are, and we need to see criminal prosecutions. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Keith in New York. Aloha, Keith. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
What's going on, guys?
Well, had a little trouble hearing you there. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing? Well, I have a issue for Qualibit. It turns out the sewer waters in America today that's, you know, disseminating to people's housings and apartments actually with this, you know, intercalated with sodium fluoride. Basically, I know a casualty who's been ingurgitating, you know, faucet water, you know, and it turns out she suffered a disease called the JC virus. And still to this day, she's, you know, intromitted in the hospital. It turns out the JC virus emasculates your immune system to fighting off, you know,
Keith, I'm going to have to interrupt you here because my Matt was telling me you wanted to talk about Bill Gates.
Oh, yeah, that's another quality that I had also. Oh, it turns out my girlfriend, she's matriculated in high school of a grandson of a famous basketball player called...
Okay, Keith, I thank you very much for the phone call, but it seems like you're not able to really kind of focus on what you want to talk about, and I'm sorry for that, but, you know, we're not into, like, fluoridated water at this point, and I realize there's kind of an issue there. But we're going to move along here, so thanks for the call and call in again. Anyway, another story that we got here, and getting away from the tainted nuts and everything. Joseph Biden, our new vice president, has basically come out, and the headline reads, Charts Course for New Wars. And, folks, I have been saying this for a couple of weeks, and we're continuing to see these indications. The United States has got a long history of digging itself into these huge financial holes, and then it digs itself out by getting into a world war. We got out of the economic crash of 1904 by getting into World War I. We know that there was a lie and deception involved in starting that war now because divers have finally confirmed that the Lusitania was, in fact, carrying munitions of war, which made it a legitimate target of the German U-boats. We're told, oh, no, innocent loss of life, go to war. We now know that, in point of fact, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in order to get the United States out of the Great Depression, lied us into a war on Japan, which was really a war on Nazi Germany. That FDR actually provoked the Japanese into the attack here on Pearl Harbor and then told the country it was all a big surprise. Sneak attack, those dastardly Japanese. And so here we are with the economy in a huge, huge mess due to reckless government borrowing and spending and an even more reckless fiscal policy that handed tax credits to corporations to ship our jobs overseas. And so what do we keep hearing about? More war. War on Iran. Netanyahu has already gone public saying that he will be able to convince Barack Obama of the necessity of war on Iran. Folks, we're still stuck in two wars that we were lied into. We were lied into the war in Afghanistan with the claim that somehow they were involved in 9/11. Then they turned around and said, well, Iraq was involved in 9/11, and they've got nuclear bombs, and they're aiding al-Qaeda, and all of that turned out to be a lie. And so now they're screaming, not that Iran has got nuclear bombs, because, of course, we, the very skeptical and justifiably so American people, would say, show us these bombs. So now they're trying to convince us we need to send our kids to die in a war against Iran because they might be thinking about acquiring nuclear weapons down the road. Well, looking at the way the United States is invading everybody in the region, of course they're thinking about getting nuclear weapons. It's a deterrent. What are they going to do? Just sit there and say we're being good little people until the tanks roll in? We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We got a couple of callers on the line before we get to them, though. Just some news. Yes, the webcam has gone down again. It just locked up. This is a fine Microsoft product, and it was working a couple of months ago. And because of a new security update to the Windows operating system, it will not run for more than 5 minutes at a time, and it will not restart. So I don't know. Maybe this is part of the plan to re-stimulate the economy, to make us go out and have to buy the same equipment over and over and over and over again, just to keep doing what we were doing before. And as long as I'm here ragging on Bill Gates and Microsoft, did you hear about this thing that he did? He's out there. Now that he's retired from Microsoft, he's out there spending his money proving what a great humanitarian he is and talking about malaria is his newest thing. So he's in this conference or convention talking about the state of malaria in the third world. And he's got a jar of mosquitoes, and he says, hey, I've got some malarial mosquitoes here. And, you know, it shouldn't be just the poor who are at risk. And he lets the mosquitoes go, and everybody just throws a fit about the whole thing. And, of course, the mosquitoes were harmless. They were not carrying any diseases whatsoever. The mosquitoes were actually harmless, but this kind of stunt and grandstanding, I think Bill Gates has been hanging out with Al Gore just a little bit too much these days. Anyway, we're going to go to the phones here. We've got Dave in California. Dave, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Michael. Yeah, Bill Gates, meet Colin Powell.
Yeah, really? Yes.
The anthrax.
With the little, with the baby powder. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to thank you for sending me a copy of Fabled Enemies. I thought your part in it was excellent and brave as well.
Yes.
I just had a couple brief comments about Obama and the economy. Had you heard that just recently, at least there's a rumor out, that that Obama was one of Henry Kissinger's proteges back in the day, one of those secret days when he was coming up through the whatever it was you came up through?
I had not heard that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Okay, well, the way the story goes was that Kissinger has some sort of special award that he gives people that allow them to work under him or with him in some fashion when they're young rising stars. I assume that would be sometime back when he was in college, and that he received that. So anyway, it's something you might want to think about and look at. And the other thing I wanted to mention was you were talking about Silverado. And you neglected to mention one of the big players in Silverado, Neil Bush.
Neil Bush, yes.
Yep.
That was definitely up to their neck. And the Clintons, too, with Madison Guarantee and the whole Arkansas Development Finance Authority and that whole scam and swindle going on. I mean, you know, we've really reached the point where we're not asking, is this or that politician a crook? We're desperate trying to find one who isn't. And, you know, it's like we can count them on the fingers of one hand. Ron Paul, Cynthia McKinney, and maybe three or four others. And the rest of them, you know, they've just got their hands out, and they're shoveling the money into their own pockets just as fast as they can. And the worst part is they don't see anything wrong with it at all. They're perfectly comfortable with it.
Yeah, well, I guess that's their job. I mean, people now say, well, they're politicians. They're supposed to lie. You know, as long as people believe that, then they can do whatever they want, I guess.
Well, I don't think politicians are supposed to lie, and I'll tell you why. It's not in the Constitution. The Constitution, the original contract with America, sets out what the government can do and, more importantly, what the government cannot do. And nowhere in that Constitution does it say the government is allowed to mislead or misrepresent to the American people. It is not in there. And the Tenth Amendment prohibits the government from assuming that authority.
Does it say anything in the Constitution about lawyers?
No, I always go back to Shakespeare for that one.
Well, anyway, it's good talking to you, man, and you keep up the good work.
All right, thanks an awful lot for the phone call. I appreciate that and glad you liked the DVD. And we're going to switch over to Dino in Oregon. Aloha, Dino. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike, good to hear you. I like listening to your show, and I enjoy when you and Alex collaborate. I think you guys have some positive things to say. I want to talk about Iran. Ahmadinejad is very against the use of nuclear weapons, and in fact, if you look for a speech of his, he calls them irrelevant and obsolete. And he would never, in his country, it's actually against their law, their Islamic law, to have such a weapon of mass destruction. They would never pursue such a thing.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is we can't go around the world killing people because of what we imagine they might be doing in the future. That is absolutely ridiculous. The burden of proof, especially after Iraq, the burden of proof is on those who accuse Iran of pursuing weapons of mass destruction. And again, even if Iran did build a nuclear bomb, what are they going to do with it?
Nuclear bomb, their weapon of mass destruction that we are afraid of is on the Kish Island. Iran has been setting up their oil borscht. You know that they've been cutting the lines, the internet lines, all around the sea, the sea cables, to cut that off. And then now they finally have launched their first satellite, which is just a satellite's only going to be up 3 months, I think. I read a lot of Iranian news. It will eventually be their way to start their own oil trading commodities market with a satellite so that we can't cut their cable. And that will be the real reason to attack Iran will be the fact that they're going to switch the currency by which they trade oil in.
Well, that's certainly one of the reasons. One thing that I've learned over all the years of watching these things is wars are never started for just one reason. There'll be one reason that's given to the masses to sell them, you know, that little hook. You know, for Lincoln, it was ending slavery was the hook that he used to get people to support the War of the North against the South. The real issues were far more complex. They were economic. They were legal. There was the original Constitution versus the new federalism. And all those things were taking place kind of out of sight of the population, who were simply told that it was all an issue about slavery. So the war with Iran, I mean, Israel's got their agenda. They've succeeded in getting the U.S. to smash up Iraq. Now they're starting to set up settlements inside Iraq. It's all part of the plan for Eretz Israel, the greater Israel. Now they're trying to get us to go into Iran and smash that up, because if we smash up these really big countries for Israel, then Israel is the dominant power in the region with their nuclear warheads, and they can basically tell everybody else in the area what to do. They will functionally, because of their nuclear arsenal, be in control of the Mideast oil, which means we'll be buying the Arabs' oil from Israel. And, you know, that's basically what's going on from their point of view. From the United States' point of view, they're desperate to get into another war because they're hoping that if they can get back to the public support they enjoyed back in 2002, that we're going to sit still for the economic hardships a little bit more than we would otherwise. I mean, it's one thing if there's a global war going on, you know, the American people will tolerate going hungry and having holes in their clothes and having to walk to work and the rest of it because there is a war on and we must, you know, do everything we can to preserve the life of the Republic. But if there isn't a war going on and we're still starving and losing and walking to work and losing our homes and everything, the American people are going to turn their wrath on the U.S. government with justification. So there's a lot of different overlapping agendas pushing for a war. And if it can't be in Iran, you know, when Iran fell off the table following the disaster in Georgia, they started talking about getting a war going in Pakistan. Well, now we're out of Pakistan, back on Iran. The point is to get a war going, and they don't even care where anymore. So we're going to take a break here. Dino, thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to take a break, back in just a few minutes.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're talking about all kinds of things in the economy. We've got a caller on the line, James. James, aloha. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind?
Hey, Mike. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. What's going on?
Okay, I'm from Detroit, Michigan, and on Wednesday, a Wayne County Sheriff, which is the home of Detroit, Michigan, stopped all foreclosure sales in Wayne County. And his critics are saying the reason he did it was to get more votes. And what the Wayne County Sheriff is saying, why he's doing it, is that he wants the borrowers to go back to the lenders to work something out. Now, we're talking about homes that are valued between $20,000 and $50,000. And what's really happening is that when these people get thrown out of these homes, prostitution moves in and drug dealers move into these homes. And what's really, really happening is that these homes, these neighborhoods are deteriorating and falling apart. And that's what he's really trying to stop. But I see that going on. It's going to come on to other neighborhoods or other counties, you know, in the United States.
Well, I think I think we're probably going to see that happening more and more. We're hearing where judges are refusing to go through with foreclosures unless they can actually find where the note on the house is. And because all of these mortgages have been taken up and broken up for all these mortgage-backed securities and literally carved into tiny chunks and spread all over the place, they can't actually find who holds the note. The foreclosures are usually being done by somebody who's administering for the mortgage-backed security, but they don't know where the note is actually going. And I agree with this for a couple of reasons. First of all, as you said, if these homes are left abandoned, you've got drug dealers moving in, or the homes are being stripped by vandals and metal thieves. You know, they tear off the aluminum siding, they rip out the copper plumbing, and then the house is destroyed by the weather and the rain, and you've got a condemned building on an empty lot. And the other problem is that with right now, like one out of every five homes on the market is a foreclosure sale. And so these foreclosure sales are driving down the price of all homes, and that in turn is going to feed a cycle of negative equity and people going into voluntary foreclosure because they don't want to spend the rest of their life paying off a mortgage that costs more than the house is actually worth. So I'm in agreement with what the sheriff is doing, and I know that some of the very short-sighted people in the financial industry saying, well, we must foreclose because our computers say that we're supposed to foreclose. You know, they're going to scream and cry and whine, but we've reached the point where, you know, somebody is going to have to eat these manufactured losses. And it is literally a war. It is a war between the people who want to stick you with all these losses and those who say, well, look, the Federal Reserve and the banks created this mess. They should eat the losses. And it's like a big, giant game of musical chairs. The music has stopped. We're all scrambling for chairs. And, you know, you got to start thinking survival mode. The bottom line is, and I'm glad you called in because this really sort of comes to something I wanted to talk about. In ancient Rome, there used to be this tradition. Actually, it was in ancient Israel. They had a tradition called Jubilee. Every 50 years, all debts were wiped out. All slaves were freed, all property returned to its original owners. And the reason for that was very simple. They understood that the practice of loaning money at interest was inherently destabilizing to a society. When Rome came along, they also adopted this period of every once in a while, the emperor would say, all debts are wiped out. And the bankers and the lenders would cry and sulk and moan about it. But the bottom line is that when you wiped out the debt, you revitalized the economy. And in the long run, the bankers actually made more money because they were lending and trading with a vital economy rather than wringing the last few pennies out of a nation in stagnation. And so it really was actually a very smart thing to do. Unfortunately, when Rome adopted Christianity as its official religion, they stopped this practice of wiping out the debts on a periodic basis. And as a result, even though they passed laws limiting the usury of money, and in some cases they tried to ban it, the bankers simply bought out the Senate from underneath the people, and Rome ran up so many debts nobody could pay it off, and that's when Rome fell, which is kind of the situation where we're at right now. So, you know, the reality is with a fiat-based monetary system, with a debt-based monetary system like we have from the Federal Reserve, the instant it's in operation, more money is owed than actually exists. And so the problem we have here right now is because they can't find more borrowers to justify the creation of new money, there isn't enough money in existence to pay off these debts. Somebody's going to get stuck with this bill, and the fight is on to see who it's going to be.
Nice. One last thing. What we do for a living is we go door-to-door selling cable subscriptions, and for the last 3 years, we've been noticing vacancies going right to the roof. Yes. You know, it's like every 10th house, now every 7th house is vacant, and I don't see it turning around for a while. Okay,
no,
thank you
I
very
don't
much.
Either. You're welcome, James, and just to follow up on what you just said, we're seeing it around here. There's a lot of retail vacancies are starting to go up post-Christmas, and this is going to trigger a new round of defaults in the commercial mortgage and real estate industry. So this cycle, we're still in the middle of it. We have not seen the bottom of this thing yet at all. We're going to go to Omar in Toronto. Aloha, Omar. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good. I just wanted to talk about the economy up here in Canada. You know, people are in denial about things, especially the media and our politicians are all saying, you know, everything's fine. Just go back and watch the ball game. And I'm just looking at an article here on Prison Planet. It says, can employment way worse than U.S.? It's actually double. which is, I could see as a businessman here, my business, I'm on the verge of bankruptcy. I got friends who just lost jobs because their businesses just went bankrupt. My bookkeeper says all her contractors are in the same boat. And myself, I really see this
it's
as
everywhere.
It's a bigger issue to me. I mean, you're talking about this war with Iran. I think, you know, people are thinking about the possibility of World War III because the only way to get over worldwide depression is to have a worldwide war. And for me, I extrapolate all this from the Israeli, you know, the Israel problem, which is, you know, it's just fanaticism. They want a greater Israel. If you look at Afghanistan, if you look at Iraq, if you look at Iran, Lebanon, Gaza, it's all to do with a greater Israel. And I think this is going to be one of the biggest issues that we're going to have to confront.
I absolutely agree with you. It is a global depression. And by the way, the unemployment numbers that are being put out officially in the United States are, in all probability, understating the situation because those numbers, that 7.6%, are just the people who just now lost their jobs. And the real story is that we have got lots of people who are working part-time but want full-time jobs, need full-time jobs. They're not counted as unemployed.
And then you've got
people who have had... We've had people who've had to take pay cuts. They've lost their $80,000 a year job. They're now in a $40,000 a year job. They're considered employed, even though they're no longer able to make their mortgage and credit card payments. We've got people who simply quit trying to look for work. They're not counted as unemployed either. The real unemployment in this country is probably above 13% right now.
Yeah.
And 25%, that's depression level.
Fiddling the numbers. And then, well, I saw an article, I forget where it was, but some guy, I don't know, down there in one of the eastern states had a job working for the government, making $100,000 a year, listening to his iPod all day or something. I used to have arguments with friends, like, you know, having all these government programs to save the dolphins or whatever. Where do they think this money is going to come from? You know, it's just going to pull it out of thin air. Eventually, that has to be reconciled. And I don't know. I don't know. I don't really see any way out of this. And quite frankly, a lot of people are scared. You know, I'm scared, you know, to tell you the truth. I mean, my mortgage, I don't have a mortgage, so I'm safe that way. Because we figured there was a group of survivalists here, and we figured this was going to happen 20 years ago. You know, it just took a little bit longer, I guess. But it's kind of surreal.
Well, you know, nations have a huge, huge inertia, and we're going to have to let you go here. And when we come back from the commercial, I've got some things to respond to you about the economy here. But thank you for the phone call and calling again. We're going to take another break here, come back for the last segment of our show, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. We've got a caller waiting on the line. Before we get to him, though, just a real quick comment. We're all hearing about people around us that we know are losing their jobs, losing their homes, losing their business. Just a few days ago, very sad news for those of us who work in the film industry. One of the world's premier visual effects houses, The orphanage in San Francisco has had to close their doors. And this is very sad news for those of us who had an opportunity to work with those people, because they had some of the most wonderful creative people in the industry working there. And on top of that, it was in this wonderful building inside San Francisco's Presidio. It's been the military turned it over to the city. The city's turning it into a media center. Lucas has a new film complex built there, and the orphanage was working there in this wonderful refurbished, renovated military barracks building. And I got to work on The Day After Tomorrow and Hellboy there. And it was really a wonderful time, and I am so sorry to hear them closing their doors. And I'm already getting resumes out here in Oahu for my company for them to come out and work here. And I wish I could give them all jobs. I really do. But unfortunately, we have, you know, this is the reality. We have clients who cannot pay their invoices. We are owed a lot of money. We can't get it from them because they can't get it from their people. We have one of the local network affiliates is not able to pay their invoice to us because their client did not pay them. That's how tight it has gotten. Nobody has reserves. Nobody has any kind of padding. And so it just takes one person or one company to go bust and not pay off their bills, and you start seeing a domino effect where it just ricochets all the way through the economy. And we look at the unemployment numbers. And again, the corporate media today was saying, well, it's only 7%. I mean, the Great Depression was 25, so really it's nowhere near as bad. Well, forget about the numbers and forget about the fact that the numbers are coming from the same government that lied to you about Saddam's nukes. Look at the graph of the unemployment numbers. It is going straight up, and there is no indication of a plateau. It's not flattening out. It's not slowing. It is accelerating. We have not seen the bottom of this yet. And this is why the U.S. government is so desperate to get us into a war, so that we will be willing to put up with the hardship and starvation and poverty, because there's a war on and we've got to support the nation. Because without that war, the American people are justly going to blame the U.S. government for this disaster. And we may very well see the riots are all across Europe. Iceland, their government has fallen. It's being kicked out. Could very easily happen here. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Tony in California. Aloha, Tony. Welcome to the show. I'll bet your governor is kind of regretting writing off that $9 billion that Enron owed the state not too long ago.
Actually, I didn't hear about that, Mike, but yeah, aloha. That's, you know, that's another good point. You know, all this stuff, it's so hard to think about what is the most important. Cause, you know, I was calling it about the economy, and then you're talking about the war, which really is kind of wrapped up in with the economy, because, the war is like the distraction to keep you focused away from the economic problems. So we definitely have to take, you know, pay attention to what's going on in Gaza and other places where people are getting killed and murdered, and encourage them to not do that anymore. It seems impossible that that's going to happen, but, you know, I don't know. We just got to keep calling in.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, your turn.
Oh, okay. I wanted to talk about the Basic Income Guarantee program. I don't know if you've heard of this program that Richard C. Cook and other people have been talking about. It sounds pretty interesting, and it sounds like socialism, but, you know, I've been playing with it. I wrote a paper on it, and in a way it doesn't seem like it, because, see, the problem here in the economy, well, the basic income guarantee goes on an assumption that production exceeds the money that people have to spend on it in an industrial-based society. So, and that's really the problem here that we have, is the money is not flowing around. You were just talking about, invoices not being paid. All this bailout money is going to banks so that they can buy more banks. I just went in, to the living room and saw, my roommate has an offer from a bank. Washington Mutual just got bought out by Chase Manhattan. So it's like, you know, that's where all the money's going. So it's not being spent in the economy. Now, this basic income guarantee would address that, where it, instead of that bailout money going to the banks, it goes to the people in the form of a dividend. So that they have, why should anybody go into debt just to buy basic food and supplies? You know, and of course, you know, it's arguable about the welfare state, the nanny state, and stuff. But you know, when you've got people out there literally living on the streets, what do you do?
Well, the problem is, I mean, people argue the virtues of unrestrained capitalism versus the virtues of socialism, and I'm not entirely in favor of either one, because the bottom line is, the real issue is, when you have a corrupted banking system which sees itself as master of the universe, it doesn't matter if you're living in a socialist regime or a capitalist one, it's still going to come down to the rich grabbing more for themselves, which means there's less for everybody else to live on. We saw socialism really didn't work in the Soviet Union. I mean, the vast majority of their people lived in abject poverty to support a ruling class that lived like the Tsars.
Really what it is, it's a constant turning of the tables. You know, the bankers are, they were behind the socialism, definitely, and they definitely funded things like the Bolshevik Revolution and, mm-hmm. David Rockefeller's, quote about supporting communist China. But then they also can, so basically they control the best of everything. So it's just been this constant turning of the tables to keep the people poor and, basically squeeze the middle class out.
Yeah, basically, and that is intentional, because throughout history, challenges to oligarchy have always come from the middle class. It was the middle class that spawned the French Revolution. It was the middle class that supported the American Revolution. The whole reason the communist system was developed was to create a society that never had a middle class, that where the lower classes and the upper classes united to view the middle class as somehow an enemy of society. And that's one of the reasons the Soviet Union persisted for as long as it did. But the bottom line here is that, again, it really does come down to the people who grab the money and the power wanting to grab more.
Exactly.
And in a lot of ways, you have to wonder, especially looking at our own government, if in point of fact that sociopathy is the common factor for some of these people we see in these places. Because people like Dick Cheney and John McCain, they have got more money than they can spend in the remainder of their life. And yet they're grasping and grabbing it more and more. It's like their whole sense of worth is based on how much of this paper fiat money they can pile up into the living room and then roll around on.
Well, I can't imagine being these people. You know, there's a page in Daniel Estulin's book on the Bilderberg Group, and it shows a picture of David Rockefeller just sitting alone in a restaurant, and the caption on the bottom says, "It may be lonely at the top." And that's really what it's about. I mean, these people, I can't imagine what kind of friends or, that they would have, what kind of a life that they would have, having to live with all the guilt of killing all these, innocent people all around the world.
They may not feel the guilt. That's the whole reason. That's the whole thing of sociopathy. They may not feel it. Their thought processes may be so alien. I mean, remember Andrew Carnegie actually thought the rich were an entirely separate species, and that the poor really they were labor animals.
Right.
You know, they were cattle, and therefore not deserving of sensitivity.
I guess they could argue that since, a lot of them tend to be kind of inbred. I mean, I don't necessarily mean that as a cut on them, but, they are sort of like that. So.
Yes, they definitely are. But we see the same attitude throughout history. When you have one group that thinks that the gods intended for them to have all the wealth, the first thing they do is demote everybody else to a less than human attitude. I mean, we see that with Israel and the Palestinians. Israel is not feeling guilty for killing Palestinians because they don't see them as human and worthy of such concern. And anytime you have a conquering army, I mean, the Americans did it in Vietnam. We called them the goops and the slopes and the slants and all the rest of the stuff. It's part of that conquering mentality. Anyway, Tony, thanks a lot. We got to let you go. We have run out of time. Boy, this was a good show today. I had a lot of fun, and thanks to all the callers who called in, because you really make this show take off, and we just have a lot of fun. So, we'll be back Monday at our usual time. We're still trying to get Dr. Tobin scheduled for sometime next week. Until then, stay safe, be well, talk to your friends about what's going on, and aloha, America.